Welcome to a new episode of Liftoff, a Jets football podcast, with your host, Chris, and from playlikeajet.com, Mr. Sharman Phillip. Remember, you can follow the show on Twitter or X at Liftoff Jets. You can follow myself at CP7NY. You can follow Sharman at GrownFolk1980. And you could also find his columns at playlikeajet.com as well. You could find our podcast wherever you find your podcast, at Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, and iHeartRadio. And you could also find us at SportsWire Radio at sportsanarium.com/player. And you could follow the station manager there, Thomas Bryce, at ThomasBryce2017, for all the scheduling of all the other great shows on there. So, Sharman, I like a victory podcast, so I'm happy we're talking about a win today.
Yeah. I was a little depressed, and it showed a lot watching that game because I was kind of on the you know, I was just on pins and needles the whole time.
Can we just get?
I felt it.
Can we just have a win?
Yeah.
Yep. Without a but. You know, like we won, but it's always a win, but this happened, or this guy got hurt, or this guy, you know, it's just can't be just, hey, the Jets won this week.
No, it can't be impossible. And if you guys are under a rock as Jets fans, you know what Chris is talking about is, unfortunately, we've lost AVT, Elijah Vera Tucker, for the season to torn
Achilles?
I mean, I can't even, like, it's crazy. That's crazy, man. It's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. And just off the air, Chris and I were talking, I think input from you guys here, because we feel like we're nuts. We've been watching football for a long period of time, and we don't remember a time in football where these major injuries were a thing. It was a rare few players that would get those injuries, and that was it. But now it's something that's almost like a trend. Almost every year, there's an incredible amount of players that get not just a 4-game or 6-game injury or 8-game injury, but they're out all season with torn ligaments. Torn ligaments. People have been playing football for a long period of time. There has never been, in my opinion, because I didn't watch football in the 70s and 80s, so I don't know. But I don't ever remember, or I've never heard anybody say that that was something, that was a thing, you know? I don't know. Or is it just that it's happening so much to us Jets fans that it seems like it's that is the thing? Two players tearing their Achilles in the same year? And we're not talking about just any player. These are the two best players on our team. And I know we will talk about guys that there's a lot of guys that have impacted this team and continue to impact this team, and also emerging players. But in my opinion, and I think Chris will agree with me, Vera Tucker is our best offensive lineman. But not only is our best offensive lineman, he's one of our best players, hands down. And we lost him again playing in Denver. Please, NFL, do something for me. Do not schedule us to play in Denver next year.
Yeah, no more.
Or ever. How about that? Give us a break. Give us like a 4 or 5 year break that we've never had. Let them come to New York. Let us play in New York. We don't want to go back because it's like, we're cursed. It's cursed.
I know. Especially Vera Tucker, you know? And
yeah. Specifically him, because that's what happens. You know, the one guy that showed up in Denver to remind Denver fans that, yeah, if it wasn't for his injury, that game would have been done earlier last year, was the return of Breece the Beast.
Yep.
I mean, this kid is something else, man. You know, of course, when I saw Tiki Barber was on the was one of the talking heads on the broadcast. It was one of those things where I was like, are you kidding me right now? Because I figured at some point he would say something stupid And, you know, like a broken clock, he said something. You know, yeah. Hey, this guy's deceptively fast. You know, he's not really a 4-4 guy.
No, you're right. He's not a 4-4 guy.
He's a 4-3 guy.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. Deceptively fast. Anybody that could run under 4-4, yeah, they're not deceptively fast.
They are fast.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. You know,
he's
crazy.
It's amazing how these guys, like, if you got a job, wouldn't you do like your research? Right? I mean, he's got all week to research the Jets and the Broncos. All week. And he can't even get that right? I mean, come on.
The issue is that it's like he goes off the cuff too many times. And then because he does that, I think, in my opinion anyway, because there's no other explanation for the reason for some of the stuff he says. It doesn't make any sense to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I understand, I think it was Aaron Rodgers that said that he reminds him of Ahmad Green. And when I remember watching Ahmad Green play, and it was the same thing. Yeah, they look like they're not moving. Mm-hmm. But in the moment, like when you're looking at the players around them, they're like, yeah, uh-huh, he's moving. Because he just keep pulling away from him, you know, recording a 21.15 miles per hour on the GPS. Come on, man. At 250 something?
And you know what? It's sad. Yeah. I look at Tiki, and you would think he would be a guy that would be great for radio or for TV, because number one, he was a former player, a very good player. He's got great, you know, playing in New York, big games, all of that, and very intelligent as well. At least I thought he was intelligent. So, and now he just, it's almost like he's lazy at his job. You know, like he doesn't take the extra time to just research, even on his radio, you know, on his radio program, his daily radio stuff he does. He's horrible there.
Clips, he really, right? Is. Yeah. Yeah. He,
like, what are you doing?
I've never given him the time of day. I've always gotten, because I hate, you know, that I've not hate. I'm going to take that back.
No, yeah.
What has happened is, I remember a long time ago that who was it? Was it that crazy older guy with the white hair? Can't remember his name. Was on that same channel, and he said something so ridiculous that to this day, I still can't actually remember exactly what he said, but I know that I changed the channel. I spent years back in the day doing construction. So I would be working and I'd have the radio nearby I would listen to a lot of sports radio. And I'd laugh because I remember listening to Colin Cowherd way back in the day when Colin Cowherd was fat, right? And I listening to him when he was the Thundering Herd. You know what I'm saying? That's how far back I was listening to radio, you know, sports radio. And I said, I would laugh at Colin Cowherd's stuff because I never took him real serious. I just thought he'd just say, you know, ridiculous things for jokes, you know. Come to find out over time that he was actually being serious, which I stopped listening because of that. But but I remember on that same channel, somebody said something, and I was like, huh? And then I changed the channel because I couldn't believe what he said. And up to this day, I cannot tell you exactly what he said. I think it had something to do with the Yankees. And from that day, I never listened to that radio station. And what I have seen is over time, they trend a lot off of crap.
Right.
They trend a lot. Like stuff comes up on Twitter because they said something stupid. You know what I mean? And nothing never trend because they actually made a good interview or anything like that. They always trend. That's why I never give them a time of day. You know?
Yeah. I totally agree. I don't listen to any of it. I'll listen to Michael Kay and Don LaGreca, but that's about it. You know, those are the only guys I take serious. The rest of them are just horrendous.
Yeah.
I'm just
back to the game.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get the good stuff at least.
Yeah, let's talk about a few observations I had. Chris, you could jump in of some of those that you had. Quincy Williams again. I mean, sheesh! Nine tackles, two sacks, a forced fumble, and a tackle for a loss.
Can we call him our most improved player so far?
He has to be,
right?
I mean, come on! I mean, to most people, I mean, for most people that don't watch this guy, they would say, yeah, he's grown by leaps and bounds. For actual Jets fans that have watched him, we've known that he's just been on the cusp. I remember, if you go back and listen to some of our episodes, even before the season, I said that he is right there. He's not that far. And all he needs to do is take that one step over. And it seems like he has. It seems like he has, because his judgment of timing, when to fire his gun, when to, you know, and then when to break down is incredible. He's so calm, you know. That, to me, that's definitely an inspiration of probably from Mosley, because Mosley's whole approach is the same, where before the snap, they're incredibly calm. They're not moving. They're just trying to key on what the offense is doing. And as soon as the ball is snapped, their eyes are directly on their keys, and then it's like, bang, out the door. And his speed, because of him, his accuracy in angle approach, which he's suffered with, and also with being a little bit, a half second more patient than he used to be, his speed like comes through like, oh my God, like crazy. You know what I mean? So, I mean, incredible. He has to be our most improved player. I think with him, you have to mention Bryce Huff, because for the first time, he had 44% of the snaps. He'd never played that high of a snap percentage before. And they played him on a lot of downs. They even used him as a spy for Russell Wilson when Russell Wilson was going on that little tear where he was basically kind of going on, scrambling out of the pocket and getting third downs. And he had he had career highs in pressures and QB hits last week when they gave him more snaps. This week they gave him, they raised the percentage a little more, and then he had another career high in pressures, which is 8, a sack, and 2 QB hits and 5 hurries, where PFF had him graded like 90.4.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, those two players have taken their game to another level, and I think, little by little, game by game, there's another name that's coming through, and his name is Jermaine Johnson. Yep. There's been talk of him and his game for so long that, especially of the offseason and how his body has changed and how he dedicated himself in the offseason to make sure he was ready for this season. And you know what? He had one of the things you could tell specifically that you see a difference, well, not a difference in, but you see more of, is his effort on every last play. This kid is going 100 miles per hour from the ball is snapped to when the whistle is blown. It's incredible. And when he could match the technique and precision of his technique to that, with that effort, him combined with Huff is going to be a problem. Because right now, teams are struggling with these two guys. So imagine what it would be like when they become more formidable at their craft. It's crazy to watch, man. I just pray that they stay healthy and we could get to see, you know, where they could take their game to, what level they could take their game to.
And I think another guy we got to mention is how good he played was Bryce Hall. I thought he played great, considering, you know, this guy's filling in for DJ Reed. And then even, that was the one I had to ask you about. Remember when Sauce got hurt and he went out for a game, a play or two?
Yeah.
That's when they tried that reverse. I still don't know why they called that the Broncos. Now you got basically the number three and number four corner out there. And you call
This is called situational awareness or situational coaching, right? This is where, in my opinion, you gotta call the Broncos coach or coaches to task. You know, because basically you're not understanding what's going on the field. You know what I mean? You max protect and put your two wide receivers against these two corners force them to cover them.
That's it.
That's all. And to me, they really weren't aware of what was going on. That was crazy. The fact that they didn't do that. You're right. You're right. That definitely was a thing.
And
you know,
and Eccles was out too for the game. So you're missing three guys right there on that play. Your top three corners, basically, on the team. So you're going with your fourth and fifth cornerback against their top two wide receivers, and you call a reverse. I'm like, because before the play, like when Sauce got hurt, I said, "Oh man, I said they're going to attack us now." You know, in the because right, and they reverse and then they fumbled, which was great.
I don't think that play was going anyway because it was well covered.
Yeah.
Whoa, Huff was right there.
Yeah.
That guy caught that ball. He was going to get smacked anyway.
I'm like, what are you doing?
Bad play calling, man. Yeah.
And look who we're talking about, right? I mean, Sean Payton is one of the best.
I know. Yeah. Hey, listen, this is where we have to talk about, you know, if you're talking about play callers or guys that draw plays, whatever you want to call them, you have to also talk about the players that execute their game plans. Because I don't care how many good ideas you have, if you cannot find a player that is all in to your idea and willing to put it out there, everything he has to execute your game plans and your beliefs, I think that you're just Adam Gase.
More or less.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that's it. And you know, there's no way I will, you know, disrespect the coaching history of a Sean Payton. I can't. He has written enough of a book in the NFL to be respected that way. But at some point, you gotta say, hey, man, listen. You know, maybe you don't have it like you used to, or you just don't have the guys like you used to. And there's been kind of rumblings of him not really being happy with Russell Wilson, which is kind of crazy to me because I don't think Russell Wilson is actually the problem here. You know, I think Russell Wilson has been playing pretty good. You know, of course, he's not the old Russell Wilson because the old Russell Wilson would have put four touchdowns on us. That's different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't think he's playing badly. I think overall the coaching has kind of let them down. And it seemed like the players have not bought in because it just mistakes, horrible mistakes. On the Breece Hall run, I don't know what the safety was doing. I really don't. Like, he was lost.
Yeah.
He was completely lost. And one of the reasons why, that's how Breece was able to beat him to the angle, because he was lost. He was way too deep towards the line of scrimmage for him to recover. And that's why Breece was able to get around him, you know. But those kind of plays have been happening all season to them, unfortunately. And that's why they've been so bad. And you got to ask, like, if those plays are happening, recurring over and over again, and we're watching the film, what are the coaching tidbits that they're being added to the sauce there to make this seem better? But like I said, enough about the Broncos. we spoke about the offense. I think all the positives about the offense. We spoke about the defense. Bryce Hall did step in and did a good job. I'm not gonna crown him. I think he did good enough for a backup guy to come in, you know, to do what he did. As you know, his awareness on that scoop and score was awesome. The way they've used both Huff and Williams and Quincy Williams is incredible, in my opinion. There's guys to me that Al Woods with that safety. The other guy they brought from Seattle, forget his name, Johnson, I think his name.
What was that guy's name?
Yeah.
Jefferson?
Jefferson, yes. Yeah. You know, Quentin Jefferson has been playing well. Of course, Quinnen has been doing his thing. He's still one of the best at getting pressures in the NFL. He's still ranked in the top six or seven, I think, in defensive tackles. But it just hasn't gotten the sacks yet. I think those will come eventually, because I think right now everybody's kind of crushing their line inside to kind of take our DTs away. That's why Huff and everybody else is getting a shot at the quarterback. But I think that's going to come. Like I said, Breece Hall, we mentioned Breece Hall. I think we can't end this without talking about Greg Zuerlein going 5 for 5. Yeah. Greg the Leg, 5 for 5. I mean, that's awesome.
I was gonna say, that's another thing. We're just not used to having how many times have we felt confident with a kicker going out there? Like, oh yeah, we got this. You know, we got these are three easy points. You know, I can't remember before him. It's been a while that we've actually felt that way, confident in our kicking game.
It's been a long, long time, man. I think that the one thing I will say that I think Zach left points out there. I think he played okay. He made a few really good throws, especially that throw he made. Was it a third down throw he made to Gary Wilson? That was an incredible throw, man. That is, especially when you get him out, roll him out like that, and he has all that space. Yeah, that's what this kid could do when you give him time. Incredible throw, but he also had that throw to Conklin on the stick nod where Conklin acts like he's going in and then goes releases back out. Accurately thrown on time, giving Conklin so much time to. And space to run down the field and actually gain a bunch of yards. And Conklin, man, he has to be featured more because I think he's better. He's probably the best route runner we have at tight end and probably the second best route runner on the team behind Garrett. Yeah. So, yeah, he should be featured more, man, I think, especially in space like that. But the thing with Zach was I think Zach had a touchdown to Conklin that he missed.
Yeah.
I think he checked the ball down. I'm trying to remember the play off the top of my head. I don't remember. It was in the red zone. He checked the ball down and it wasn't Conklin. It was Lazard that was open. In the back of the end zone. You know, that's the problem with Zach. Again, there's nuance to this. Zach reads defenses well, but he reads it too fast. The timing of the offense, he needs to be in sync with it. You have to have that rhythm. You gotta go. If the read goes 1, 2, 3, you gotta hit 1, 2, 3. If you go 1, 2, 3, you're moving a little too fast. And because of that quickness, you're taking away the opportunities that was provided to you by the cadence of the offense, which is what offensive coordinators create when they call their plays like that. There's a reason. There's a sequence to what they do. And when you're too fast or too slow, it messes with everything. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's the problem with him. There is times where he just cannot sync up with the movement or rhythm of the offense. And especially in the red zone, he's really struggled. And because of that, I think the Jets are like 31st in red zone touchdown percentage.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's the reason why Zerline had to go 5-for-5. And we cannot win games like this, especially next week. We cannot bring that kind of stuff to the Eagles because it's going to be an ugly game.
On that play that you're talking about where he did miss Conklin, it was the incompletion. What's his name? Rob Carpenter, the former Jet. He reposted a tweet by Damian Woody showing how Garrett Wilson was he was basically running a cross pattern, right? Conklin was over the middle, and there was no safety up top.
Oh, I remember that play. That's why I missed the one I'm talking about. Talking about the one where Garrett Wilson. There was a play where Garrett Wilson was lined up outside on the X, kind of motioned inside towards Lazard, and then he ran kind of an out route, and Lazard ran kind of like what you would call, like almost like he's running kind of a corner route. And the safety left him wide open.
Yeah.
And Zach just cycled through the reads way too quick, you know? And Lazard was that was a touchdown, you know? And that's the thing. I think over time, this is another hurdle for him to cross. You know, he had the ones where he couldn't complete the really easy, simple passes. He had the ones where he couldn't keep his feet quiet in the pocket, you know? And he's gotten better at those too. So now I think being able to get in sync with that offense, with the offense, and get the ball to the right place at the right time is the next hurdle for him to cross. You know. And I'm hoping that he gets to it quickly because we have a monster of a team to play next.
And you know what? Just before we get to the Eagles, this game, just watching it, it proves both points about running backs, right? When they say about, you don't have to pay running backs, you don't have to use a draft pick, all that stuff. When you look at it from the Broncos side, that kid, McLaughlin, he's an undrafted kid out of, because I'm like, who is this guy? You know, out of, I think, Youngstown State, undrafted.
Yes. Yep.
And you see what he could do, right? So that's the argument for you don't have to draft a running back high. You don't have to pay these guys. You could just get a undrafted kid out of nowhere state and, you know, and he'll come in and do fine. But on the other end, look at what Breece Hall did. This is a second round draft pick, and that's a stud, and that's a guy you could build your team around, basically. You know, this guy's just like, obviously a different player, but he's like a Derrick Henry type running back that you could build around your offense around this guy. You know what I mean? This is a guy that could carry you at points in a season.
Yeah. And that's the thing about it. It's like running backs are not made. I think NFL players on the whole, they're just not made like they used to. So you were able to lean on one guy, right? But unfortunately, the numbers show that you can't anymore, and we basically tend to run a kid into the ground when you give him a specific amount of carries per year. So, you take the kid, McLaughlin, and you're like, hey, man, he's playing really well. And you take him, and then you put him, and then you start giving him 20-something carries a game or 18 carries or 20 carries a game. And he gets nicked. And he gets a little, slower here and there. And then, and he's not even that big of a kid. He's running, for running back side, he's on the smaller side, no? So So you got to be pretty careful with those guys. I mean, he's pretty good, but I think he's good for a guy that you probably need another running back for. And that's the thing.
He's not bad. It's going to, but you could get two of those guys, you know what I mean? Two or three of those guys.
Yeah.
And, instead of, but just my point was how these how the teams are going with the running back position now, where they don't want to pay a guy, you know, like a Jonathan Taylor. He finally gets his money. You know what I mean? The Colts finally pay him, but he's another guy. We've seen him. He could carry a team at points in the season. You know what I mean? It's not like,
yes,
I guess.
You're right. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Because you don't need him to carry you through the whole season. You just need, and a lot of times teams need that. You need a spark, right? You need somebody to give you something. And the kid, that's definitely what he could do that. He could definitely give you, you know, for a 3-4-5 game stretch, he could definitely give you that.
And we're going to kind of see that in the game that we're going to talk about, right, with the Eagles. The Eagles throw three guys at you at running back. Right? They don't
they all are incredibly talented.
Yeah.
In different ways.
Right. Yeah, they're gonna cause a lot of problems for us.
Yeah, we're gonna have our hands full playing these guys, man. I mean, there are two teams in the NFL that have rosters almost from top to bottom where they not only surface, like, not only are the top guys incredibly good, but the backups could come in and give you problems. It's crazy, you know, the kind of talent they have. So I mean, you're the resident Eagle aficionado. Yeah. Like, give me an outlook on this team and how they look.
Well, for one thing, they are getting healthier, right? You got N'Kobe Dean coming back this week. He's practicing this week, so you might get him back. But you know what? The linebackers that they have are playing much better without him. So that was the important. That was the big question this week, I think, coming from Eagle fans, was, is Dean going to just step right back into the starting role? Because I think the guy's name is McLaughlin. No, I'm sorry.
The Eagle. What, middle linebacker?
Yeah.
Cunningham.
I'm sorry. Cunningham.
Yeah.
He's been playing really good. Yeah. And there's another guy too.
Morrow.
Yep, got it.
Yeah. Morrow, Cunningham. Reddick plays linebacker too, right? The way they align.
Yeah.
Outside.
And I, you know, like we've said it before, is how good the Eagles on the offensive line and the defensive line, how good they are on both. I mean, like you said, the defensive line is deep. Like, they're just going to keep bringing guys in, like Fletcher Cox. Yeah. You know, he is a starter, but he doesn't play, you know, a lot of snaps because they just keep rotating guys in and out.
Yeah.
And then Jalen Carter, the rookie, who's it's amazing how this guy fell to the Eagles.
Crazy. And if you watch how he plays, it's incredible. Like, he is a problem. His sideline to sideline speed. When I say sideline to sideline, I really don't mean. I mean, sure. Okay, this is what it is. Short area quickness for a big man makes absolutely no sense. No sense whatsoever. He does, and he has this incredible swim move that it's almost like he teleports from spot to spot. Basically, that's how quickly he moves. And he uses his leverage by, you know, swatting the opponent away, which is crazy how he kind of swats and moves at the same time. And it's like, bam, and he's, oh, crap. And the guy's standing there in like, wait, where did he go? And he's behind him. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And this is a kid that's like not even halfway through NFL pro season. What kind of monster are you creating over there? You know, so because I know for sure over time that like mostly defensive linemen suffer from, they kind of take time to understand the game, the pro game at the line of scrimmage. And it takes them a little time, and then they kind of get it. Even the really good one took a little time before. Not this kid. He kind of came rolling downhill the moment he started. So it's crazy. Like you said, they got Cox, they got Davis, they got Carter, they got Williams, Derek Barnett, Graham. Oh my goodness. And yeah, I mean, and you know, N'Kobe Dean was a guy that we loved, Chris and I, coming out.
Yep.
And the only issue we thought that he was gonna have was injury, and basically that's kind of what's happened.
Yeah.
But if this guy is healthy and you could put him on the field with the linebackers they've had, you know, how Morrow has played and Cunningham has played so well.
Yep.
You know, it's crazy how they've been balling.
Yeah. No, it is. Their one injury, the main injury for them, Fletcher Cox, I think, is going to be out this week with a back injury. And
oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah, and their guard, I think, is still out too. Juergens, they're starting right guard.
Does that really matter?
No, I don't think it does. Just think about it. Last week, they played really well against the Rams. The Rams only got one sack. Aaron Donald had four. He had four tackles. So
they like from left tackle to right tackle. Who what? Where? Dickerson, Mailata. Let me Mailata and Dickerson on that side. those are like two Pro Bowl players right there. And then you add Jason Kelce, who's a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Come on, man.
And then you go to the other side. He's another future Hall of Famer.
Right? Yeah, and I know he. And in my opinion, like I haven't watched. I won't say I have watched a ton of Eagles football. But what I have watched, I don't think he's the old Lane Johnson. I don't think he is. I think he's playing okay. I think if you're going to say there's a weakness, I think probably that's where the weakness is, on the right side. But is that really a weakness, though?
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's not playing as good as he normally does, but he's still pretty good. You know, like he may not be more pro this year, but he's still probably one of the better, you know, right tackles still in the league.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's such a big guy that, you know, all he has to do is move and he's going to cover you. I mean, the guy's a monster. So,
and the fact that this is the thing, the athleticism and the size is the one thing, but then you have the years and years of football experience that played in that and at the line of scrimmage in the NFL, and all tricks in the book. He knows them, and he knows how to execute them, you know, because he's fine tuned them over time. That's why he's been great for so long. So it's going to be an incredibly formidable team that we're going to be playing. And with all that we've mentioned, we still haven't mentioned A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith.
Now,
we haven't.
Hey, this is where
Kenneth Gainwell, we haven't mentioned.
Right.
We didn't mention. And we didn't mention the quarterback, who we've struggled as a defense in letting quarterbacks run, right? All season, that's what we do. Every running quarterback we've played, and even last season, we kind of struggled with that, right?
Yep. And I think that's where, if we could, for me, the weakness, if there is in the Eagles, is their depth at wide receiver, right? Because they do, like you said, A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith, great 1-2. There's not many 1-2s that are better than those guys. But after that, you know what I mean? So, and we do have, if DJ Reed comes back this week, and he was limited in practice so far. If he comes back, I believe we're okay, you know, against those two guys. And then whoever they got else, you got Quez Watkins. Right. That's what I mean. They have, and even, I'll be honest, Goddard, he's a good possession guy, but he's not going to kill you, even though he had a great
game. Yeah, he hasn't. Right. And I think Hurts is learning how to get to him.
Yeah.
In times when he's in trouble, because teams are trying to take away Brown and Smith. Mm-hmm. He's learning how to get to him. And like you said, I think recently he had a really good game throwing to him, because I think he's learning how to kind of get to him in his, you know, use him as a security blanket like he's supposed to.
Yeah.
But because I'm not going to lie, in the beginning of the season, I think a lot of teams were taking away the things he likes because all the film he put out there last year, people started trying to understand how to attack him. And they kind of had a lot of small victories by kind of forcing him to take the ball down, you know, and run with it or dump the ball down, which is something that he did not do last year because all he did was bombs away. Right. So, you know, so teams have done that. It'll be interesting to see what the game plan from Robert Saleh and Jeff Ulbrich is going to be this week against these guys.
I think the important thing is they got to stop the run against.
Yes. Eagles. Yeah. And the Jets defense have slow starters. They've been slow starters all season. You cannot play against this team as a slow starter. No. You cannot do that.
Why do you think that is with the Jets this year? Because, you know, the second half, they've been excellent in the second half in almost every game.
We know, right? We know that the at the core of the Jets defense, the thing that drives them is the aggression, right? Four down linemen trying to get upfield. That's all they do. We're getting upfield. We don't care what you do. We're getting upfield, and the contingencies by the second level players to kind of mitigate what the issues are or what the issues that kind of arise at an incredibly aggressive front four, right? That's what they do. That's how they play. The crazy thing about it is that teams use stuff like screens and traps to kind of play into your hands, you know, to use that aggression against you. And early in the games, those things are what have been working. You know what I mean? And it's kind of crazy because as a team that's ultra aggressive, you should see those things coming from a mile, because guess what? You're taught within your scheme to look for these things every game, because that's what teams are going to do against you when you're playing that sort of scheme.
Right.
But for some reason, I don't know why, for at almost one quarter of every game, the first quarter, the defense is like,
yeah, they come out.
They're just not paying attention. Guys are not where they're supposed to be. A lot of guys are taking, there was a play, I think, where I saw Huff was on the edge and then he kind of just dived in, completely missing the gap he was trying to dive into. And now he's like standing there the quarterback has this whole edge to take off, and he takes off for like 12, 15 yards. And that, and not preserving your gap integrity, if I don't care how aggressive you are as a defensive line, I think gap integrity is something you just cannot, you know, you cannot do. And against Jalen Hurts, if you're going to do stuff like that, where you're going to dive inside when you can't get to the quarterback and you just can't try to not allowing yourself to just stay contained, let him try to find his way through the line instead of just giving him an open edge to get all the way down the field. That's what, in my opinion, is going to change the game, is if they're from the jump containing this guy, keeping him in the pocket. If you can't get as an edge player, if you cannot get to the quarterback, stay in your lane. Force him to find a way other than through you or by you. And I think that's what's going to matter more, especially early in the game. I think that's going to kind of set the tone to what the Jets want to do. But it'll be very interesting to see the way they play them, especially the back end. How they're gonna kind of manipulate the scheme to kind of stop what the Eagles like to do.
Yeah, and just to add to the defense in the second half for the Jets, check out these point totals. First week against Buffalo, 3 points. Dallas, 12. New England, 3. Kansas City, 3. And just this week against Denver, 8.
Yeah.
That's the second half. I mean, imagine if we had that in the first half.
Yeah. Right? So they will say, Coach Speak will say, hey, man, we just haven't put together a complete game yet. You know, and hey, listen, I'll give that to you. But
right,
you better come with that this week.
Right.
because you don't want your you don't want Zach Wilson going in to the second quarter 17-0. That's a complete possibility. 21-0 is complete possibility with that team. Right. This we're talking about the two one of the two most formidable teams in the NFL. That's what we're facing this weekend. And if we're not hot or we're not riled up from the beginning to play this game, yeah, it'll be over incredibly quick.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And we've seen Philly just take over games running the ball. Forget about throwing the ball. They could just take over teams just running the ball at will.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. That's another thing too. And a lot of the runs to me that the Jets allowed is kind of like I don't think it's something that's inherently wrong with the scheme at all. I just think guys are just not doing what they're supposed to do on a lot of those runs. There are places that they're not supposed to be in. Unfortunately, in my opinion, that's what happens. So you could say bend and not break, but when you're playing a team like that, this is not the team you play that with, in my opinion. I think you gotta like abandon that. You gotta call true cover three, bait them into throwing those bombs away throws, call on Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed. If DJ Reed is 100% and he's gonna play, call on your two corners to stop Devontae Smith and AJ Brown, and just go at this dudes with everything you have. Yeah. In my opinion, that's how you do it. I don't see you do a bend not break against, because if they're gonna force you to break, that's how good they are. Again, in my opinion, two of the most formidable teams in the NFL, together with the 49ers, they have almost no weakness anywhere on their roster, and they could do whatever. They could run. You want them to run, they'll run. And there's nothing you could do about it. And he wants to throw down the field. He has enough weapons that he could basically dink and dunk you all day. So, yeah, it's going to be something.
All right, so what do you think? You think we're going to win? You think Philly?
Yeah, I don't know if we're ready to beat a team like this, man. I really don't. I acknowledge all the growth that this team has and all the things that we've done better. I acknowledge all the how good a lot of our players have stepped up, especially on defense. You know what I mean? But with the loss of AVT in the front, I mean, I love McGovern, but bro, I don't think he has it to go up against these guys you're talking about. That's going to be face to face with him. I don't know, man. I don't know. We're talking about a kind of a mid-level center playing against two of the most elite defensive linemen in the NFL, and their cub. I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but Jets fans, man, I love my team, but you got to just call a spade right here, man. We might put up a good little fight, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think we'll hang for a little bit, but I don't know. I see maybe like a 27-17 game with Philly winning.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I think I must see more of a 31-14 game, something like that, because you know, I see the Jets scoring like two touchdowns or something like that, because I just don't, I can't, man. I can't see it. I want to see it because it's my team. You know what I mean? But yeah. I have to be realistic here, you know. Of course, on Sunday when I'm watching the game, all this will be out the window and I'll be rooting the hell out to make sure my team wins. Of course. But I got to be realistic here, you know, and truthful that as much as we've grown, that there are places on our team that are just, in my opinion, gaping holes that teams like this take incredible advantage of. And, I don't see it.
You know what? And I don't know if they're looking ahead, but their next, after they play us, their next eight games are ridiculous, Philadelphia. They got Miami at home. Next, then they go to Washington. Then they come back to play Dallas. Then it's the bye week. After the bye week, they go to Kansas City, come home to play Buffalo, come home to play San Fran, then they go to Dallas, and then they go to Seattle.
What?
Yeah.
Holy.
So I don't know if they're looking ahead, but I don't know. Maybe they are, and they're going to say, listen, we got to get the wins when we can. So yeah. Because I don't know how many more we got in here. But
yeah,
that's a gauntlet right there, the next 8 games for them.
What? Oh, man. Hey, listen, I don't feel sorry for them. Hey, God bless them.
No,
you got to do it, and it's not us.
Hey, if they walk out of there, like counting us, it'll be 9 games. If they walk out of there with 6 wins, that's pretty impressive. And only 3 losses, that would be pretty impressive for them.
That would be very impressive. You know, that would be, like, you know, again. But again, if any team is built for it,
yeah, them. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
It's them. They're built for that. That's what they're made for. You know, they could, again, like I said, they could bludgeon you if they want to. They could throw the ball downfield. They could paper cut you, you know, to death. They could attack you in so many different ways on offense. And then on defense, sheesh, it's just, you know, it's just assassin after assassin after assassin. So it's an interesting thing, man. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. Maybe they show up and they're, you know, they took a kind of a side look at the schedule and they're like, oh, my God.
And we
that's
get
all we got. And then they kind of ignore us for a little bit, you know, yeah. Maybe.
Never know. It's possible.
It's possible.
Before we get into week 6 games, what do you think about the whole Mecole Hardman trade rumors coming out? Do you think that's a good thing, bad thing?
Interesting thing, man. It's probably one of the most baffling situations I've ever seen. I don't remember anything rivaling this. They brought him in. We all know what he is, right? And the kind of the argument going in was, hey, he might be able to develop because this guy is still incredibly young. And if you could only get him to get a few routes under his belt with his speed, he could be an incredible weapon, right?
Yep.
For some reason, this guy just fell out of favor with the coaches. And I remember sometime in camp, there was like a bunch of game practices where he dropped a bunch of balls. And all I could, and I saw somebody else say it too, it wasn't me also only, but I saw somebody say it that also that that he might have his reaction to him dropping all the balls and everything like that. And maybe he kind of, you know, fell out of favor with the coaches, you know. That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, then he fell out of favor and then Gibson rose. And they were like, hey, listen, we're paying this dude a certain amount of money. And here comes a guy that's undrafted that kind of gave us the same kind of situation, but with, you know, with less money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe that's the issue. Maybe that's what's going on here. I don't know. Other than that, what do you think?
I have no idea. And he tweeted something today, and I'll read it to you real quick. He says, I can't wait till I get a chance to really tell y'all what I really want to tell y'all. And this don't got nothing to do with my current situation either. So read into that what you will, I guess. But
what the one thing I will always say, right, and we listen, again, we've watched football for you know, we're a little older, so we've been watching football for a little bit.
I've been a few times.
and these are the things that we, like, there have been stories that we've just found out now about things that we watched 20, 30 years ago. So a lot of what happens behind the scenes in football, the stories come out, but it takes time. It takes time, man. And maybe because of the rise of social media, it takes a little shorter time to come out. But yeah, eventually it'll come out what exactly happened.
Right, exactly. Like, what was the reason why? Because they signed him pretty early.
Yes.
In season two. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and I thought he was basically the replacement for Berrios. Like, that type of...
I thought so, too. Yeah. Right? Which was intriguing. It was incredibly intriguing, yeah. In my opinion.
I thought he was an upgrade.
Yeah.
At least I thought. But so, anyway, we'll see. You know, I'm sure we're not going to get much for him. You know, so I'm not expecting, you know, a starting offensive tackle or something for him. So if we could get a low draft pick, a low draft pick swap, like we've seen, you know, just something would be nice, you know, some kind of
depth. Yeah. Well, talking about starting offensive linemen, I think the Jets had Lyle Collins, formerly of Dallas, formerly of the Bengals, in for a try.
Yeah.
He's more of a right tackle kind of guy. When this guy was good, he was good. He was damn good.
Right.
And the injuries kind of have taken a toll on his career. But if he's healthy and he could give us a 75% of what he used to be, in my opinion, that's better than what I don't know, to tell you the truth. That's one of the big question marks for me, is what Mitchell is.
Right.
Because Mitchell is, at some point last year, he was playing very well before he got injured. And then since he's been injured and since he's been back, he has not looked the same. You know, I know a lot of players go through that, where they kind of struggle to kind of gain confidence in themselves after they come back from injuries. But we haven't seen the same Mitchell since he came back after injury. And even then, he's still, in my opinion, not on the level of the 75% of the legendary Lyle Collins was. You know what I mean? So if he is that, and they find, you know, they could bring him in, I'm not against it.
And they still got Dwayne Brown coming back as well. So we'll see what we have left in him.
You know,
to our depth. So, yeah. So I'm sure we'll see by the end of the week that we'll hear something about them signing or not signing him. All right, let's run down week six games, see where we're at. Thursday night, Denver, coming off their loss against us, go to Kansas City. Good luck there. Kansas City coming off their win at Minnesota, 27-20. Yeah, I can't see Denver.
we don't have a lot to say about that. You know, I said what I said about Wilson. I don't think Wilson is playing really badly this season. It's just that, you know, I think everything around him is not helping really much. I think that his skill position guys are kind of starting to emerge a little bit, but when his offensive line is struggling and his defense is struggling, when you put that together, not a good look. I don't see them winning that game.
Yeah. No, I think it's just going to get more uglier. I know there were some reports that they said inside the locker room, it's starting to feel like the team is going to tear it all down and go through a whole redo and everything else with that team. So you might even see Wilson getting moved or cut, and it's going to get ugly, I think, in Denver, because they did not look good. So far they're 1-4. Their only win was Chicago a couple of weeks ago. So not good. And then Sunday morning, game from London, Baltimore and Tennessee, both teams coming off losses last week. Baltimore against Pittsburgh, which I'm really surprised at that, and Tennessee losing to Indianapolis.
Yeah, well, Baltimore struggled, man. I think the offense struggled. I think I saw a lot of drop catches by the skill position players for the Ravens. And I just think overall it kind of took Lamar Jackson out of rhythm, and I think he was never the same after all those drops. Kind of took him out of his game. I think that was the reason. I think they just gave the Steelers too many chances, and you know, I think there's one of these players in the NFL, TJ Watt, and I think you give him enough time chances to at you, he's going to get you at least one. He's going to get you once. And that's basically what he did. He was kind of dormant most of the game, and then they gave him too many chances. And right. he came back to bite them. And they gave, and you know, this did the throw, the one throw that Pickett had downfield to what's his name, that wide receiver, Pickens. Yeah, that's what we thought we would see more of with this team, the Steelers. So, I'm kind of surprised with the performance. Yes, I agree. Because they're way more, I think they're way more put together than they performed against the Steelers. But I'm not worried about the Ravens. I think they'll be fine. The Titans, on the other hand, you know, because of the talent they have, because of King Henry, because of the way they could run the ball, I think they will always pose a threat. But they're going to have an issue beating the Ravens. I think the Ravens win this game.
Yeah, I'm with you. Washington travels to Atlanta. Washington coming off their ugly loss Thursday night to Chicago, 40-20, and Atlanta coming off a victory at home against Houston, right? Double check. Yeah, they beat 21-19.
Yes.
So this is an interesting game. I think. Listen, you know what? We're going to talk about Minnesota in a bit, but if Minnesota is really going to trade Kirk Cousins, if they're ready to start throwing up the white flag, and if Kirk Cousins, because I think he's got a no trade clause, so if they could trade him, I think Atlanta's a perfect spot for him. What do you think?
Not when you have Ridder having his best game of the whole season. Well, come on, man. I think I understand what you're saying, but they see something in this kid, and he kind of showed a little bit of something against this game in this game. I think there was something about them that you know, again, Atlanta kind of showed a little bit of poise. That whole team did. Even when after the Texans drove down for the take the lead in with 1 minute and 50 some on 1 minute and 49 seconds remaining, I think that was when even then, you know, Ridder came in the game and kind of just drove them down to the field goal range and to kick the field goal. So right. Kind of showing kind of the poise there, being on kind of unflappable. They drew them offsides four different times in the first half. Yeah, it was the cadence, the multiple cadences. That's a high football IQ quarterback, understanding what he has, seeing that it's impacting the defense that he's playing and using it as a weapon. That's the thing, right? There's so many parts to the game of quarterbacking, right? We all only talk about the throwing of the football and the accuracy. A lot of guys could throw the football. The accuracy is helped by your foot, by the way, you always have your foot under your feet under you. You always point them down the hallway, which is kind of a QB play language. The thing is, you have that stuff you have to take. Then you have also to understand the offense, understand the rhythm of the offense, and be in the rhythm of the offense, all that stuff. And the thing with Ridder, in my opinion, is there's a lot of his quarterback game that's refined, but it's just not coming together. He hasn't been able to put it together. And I think this game, you kind of saw a flash of what it would look like when it's put together. And for that, in my opinion, is why I don't think they were going to readily give in or give up, you know, with on him, because they got something there. I don't know what it is yet, right, but there is something about this kid. It's not there is, you know, I have a thing for like the gunslinger quarterback. That's my, I love gunslingers. The kid from Washington last year, love that. Now, that's not going to be NFL QB. You're not going to play for a team. Teams are not going to give you a starting job because you could do that. But I think Ridder is more of the kind of guy that you're talking about. I think the decision-making you could see, the poise you could see, the IQ you could see, and all he needs to do is take that and put together with the other parts of his QB game, and he's going to be fine. So I love the Falcons. We know already that they could run the ball. We also know that they have an incredible amount of talent with London. And what's the tight end's name? The big kid,
Pitts.
Yeah, you put that together, and I think you have an incredible set of players. So, and on the other side of the game, Washington, they laid an egg. Where the hell was that defense?
Big time.
I don't know what. Yeah, these guys could not rush the passer. Nobody showed up. I don't know. I don't know what the deal was with that. On the other hand, when they played last week, they played pretty good, no?
Oh yeah, I thought Washington was going to beat Chicago Thursday night. I didn't think that was going to be that way. I mean, especially with the way Chicago was playing.
Right. So that's the thing with me and Washington. Washington, all these guys on the front line, these guys got paid, and then they're not showing up, in my opinion. I know the pass rusher. Trying to complete his first complete NFL season.
Oh, Braxton. Young
is his name. The end for the Commanders.
Yeah, from Ohio State.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, right. So I think he's gonna be fine. I think he's gonna be fine. But I question the other guys, man. Where's those guys? You know, the Alabama boys in the middle. Where are they? I don't know what. You know, but they're gonna have a hard time against the Falcons because the Falcons are never say die kind of team, man. They will bludgeon you with the running game, and then on top of that, like I said, Desmond Ridder has something, man. And I don't think the Commanders have that back end defense that could kind of, you know, take the ball away from him multiple times to force him, you know.
Yeah.
So I take the Falcons.
Yeah. Yeah, because I just don't trust Washington, you know. Thursday at home getting beat like that, I don't know. Next game, you got Minnesota coming off their loss against Kansas City at home. Go to Chicago to play the Bears. We're just talking about who all of a sudden look impressive, right? They beat Washington 40-20 on Thursday night.
Yeah, four touchdown back. I think was that back to back four touchdown games for Justin Fields?
No, did he do that the week before?
I gotta go look at this because I could swear that he threw four touchdowns the game before.
But yeah, they played Denver the week before.
Yeah,
yeah, he did four touchdowns. You're right.
Sheesh. Yeah. So that's back to back four touchdowns. Yeah, and he looks like he looks incredible, but there's still the pieces of his game missing. He rushes some of his throws that he hasn't really gotten his feet under him properly. He hasn't gotten his alignment properly to get the ball. So he's throwing the ball wide. He's having these issues, in my opinion, that I think when you kind of smooth those out, he's going to be a more of a dangerous player. But you kind of see a little bit of that there, right? With those two games of what we thought Justin Fields would be. Ultimately, I think what happened in these two games is that they protected for him. They gave him time in the pocket. I think that was the most time I've seen him play with the most time in the pocket that he's had. So I think that's the thing. I think, ultimately, for him to get his game up, he needs to perform when the pocket's a little tighter and the window's a little tighter. That's when quarterbacks, NFL quarterbacks, are made, man. So, you know, as much as I applaud him for his performance, and I think again playing against the Vikings, I think it's another chance to put up a bunch of games because the Vikings defense is, sheesh. And it's just nasty work.
And add that just put Justin Jefferson on the injured reserve. So
yeah, yep. I mean they got some players that could play there, but I mean the rookie kid is okay. Madison is okay, but I think they all work better when Jefferson is around. So now with Jefferson gone and the spotlight's on those guys, I don't think they could perform on that level. So yeah, I pick the Bears in this game.
And yeah, me too. And I think this is, you know, Minnesota loses here. They're 1-5. The season, you hate to call it done, but with Justin Jefferson missing at least the next
probably four games. Yeah. Yep.
So it's not looking good for them. And you might see them move a couple of guys at the trade deadline coming up. So that's a team to look out for, especially Kirk Cousins' name. That name's going to come up in trade rumors now with another team. I don't know what's another team that's looking for a quarterback. Not Tampa. How about New England? Before we get into more games, but
the issue is the boss of all bosses, the don of all dons. Is he ready to, you know, throw in the towel and say, hey, man, my quarterback is just not good enough.
Yeah.
And go out there and get somebody that could actually play.
Yeah, no, we'll see. Get to them in a second. Seattle travel. This is going to be good. Seattle's off the bye. They're going to travel to Cincinnati. Cincinnati came off a victory at Arizona, and Burrow in that offense, Jamar Chase, 3 touchdowns. Cincinnati looked like the Cincinnati we thought they would be before the season started. So do you think Joe Burrow is back?
Yeah, he looked better. He looked like the old Joe Burrow. That's the thing, you know. I didn't see the Bengals do anything that looked like what the Bengals offense do. I just thought that Burrow looked the more of what he is, or what he, you know.
Yeah,
you know, and I think overall you gotta say that the line blocked better for him, no?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they really did. I caught a good chunk of this game, and I would say most definitely it looked like he had more time in the pocket to get the ball out, and you know that the talent that they have on that team, that you give that QB time to throw the ball, that's it for you. I'm done. You're done.
Yeah, there's too many weapons on offense. Jamar Chase had 15 catches, 192 yards, and 3 touchdowns.
Jeez.
So very good game, I would say.
Yeah. So, another name we forgot to mention in the Bears game was the kid, the wide receiver in the Bears game that went off. Moore.
Yeah, DJ Moore.
Yeah, he seemed unblockable in that game too.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to the Bengals. I think at the end of the day, that's what matters. If the QB is healthy and he could actually play his game and you give him time in the pocket, he is good enough. Oh, I can't say good enough because I'd be disrespecting him. He's one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, and he'll torture you.
Elite. And this is going to be – we'll know if he's back or not, because now you're going against Seattle. So
yeah, and Seattle is a pretty formidable team. So it's going to be a great matchup, man. I think that's more – to me, this is more of a measurement of what Seattle is than it's a measurement of what the Bengals are, because I think the Bengals have enough tape out here to kind of for us to know exactly what they are. I know they haven't played well at all this season, but this is what they do. This is going to be the third year where they start horribly and everybody's calling for heads to roll and, oh my God, what are they going to do? And then all of a sudden they start winning games. And we know when that team gets hot, how hot they could be. Yep. And they have the talent to cause a ruckus. So yeah, I'm not worried about them. I want to see what Seattle actually is, and that it's an interesting thing. It's a kind of a measuring stick in my opinion to see what Seattle really is.
Yeah,
I picked the Bengals.
I think so. At home, Seattle's got the big, the big travel coming all the way from the West Coast. So the only thing that's helping Seattle is I think they were off last week, right? I think they were coming off the bye. That's the only thing that gives Seattle a little bit of an edge here. But maybe Cincinnati gets on a roll now after last week. Next game, San Fran. San Fran put on a show Monday night. I'm sorry, Sunday night, beating up on Dallas, 42-10. Yeah. And they travel to Cleveland. This should be a good one. Cleveland's coming off a bye. I think San Francisco wins, but let's see how much Cleveland could stay in this one.
Yeah.
San Fran is good.
Sheesh, man. I mean, you playing football like that, when you're playing football on that level, you're almost unstoppable because what they're doing is crazy, man. They could run the ball out of multiple formations, whatever it is. Then the same players that they use to kind of fortify their run blocking can leak out at any second and catch a ball and take it to the house. Yeah. Is it tight end? It's the fullback. The fullback is catching slant routes. What? Texas routes. What are we doing? What is going on here? As a defensive player, what are you defending? Again, the key to being, in my opinion, if you're a defensive player, there are things that you were looking for that tells you, or telltale signs that kind of take you to where you want to be, right?
Yep.
How do you make up in your head that the fullback is a threat and the tight end is a threat in that game? And on top of all that, right, the wide receivers are a threat.
Yeah.
I don't get it. And the fact that they get you all discombobulated because the rhythm of that offense changes like so easily. They go quick count, slow count, medium count, slow count, quick count, quick count, quick count, quick count, slow count, medium count. they're taking you through all these weird patterns and calling all these crazy plays from different angles, calling offensive schemes or out of these crazy formations. Man, listen. And it's executed to a T. That's the problem. Yeah. So Washington, Seattle's going to have their hands full, man. I mean, the Browns are going to have their hands full.
Yeah. Yeah, San Fran wins this game. I'm just curious how long Cleveland could stay in it. That's my checking out. Next up, Carolina, still winless, 0-5, lost to Detroit. They travel to Miami, 4-1. I don't think there's much to say here.
Miami is just too good right now, man. Yeah. And what are you doing? Too much firepower, man.
Yeah.
Too much firepower.
Next game you got Indianapolis coming off their loss, against Tennessee, and they travel to Jacksonville. Good divisional battle this week. Jacksonville coming off their big win in England against Buffalo.
What do you think caused the Jags to play that much better than the Bills? Do you think there is truth to the fact that the Jags stayed over in London and they were there and the Bills had to fly in and were basically kind of, you know, they had been there in short time? Do you think that was a part of the reason why?
Absolutely. And you know what? And Jacksonville's been to London, you know, playing these English games in England a lot more than any other team. So I think they have an advantage. Like, they're used to the travel. They know what to expect. You know, when you make that trip once every couple of years, you don't really know what to expect. And, you know, and it's a big trip. It's not a easy travel. You know, it's a, what, 5-6 hour flight. So, yeah, absolutely. That has something to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll agree with you, man. Because that Buffalo Bills team did not look anything like the Buffalo Bills team we know. And I don't think you'll see them out of sorts too many times for the season. So I credit the Jags for winning that game, but I, you know, That's to me they play that game 10 times. I think probably they win two of them. I don't think they win the other. I think the Bills beat them, but I think the Colts game, I think I love the Colts competitive nature. I think you've seen a lot of emergence of talent. I think it's pretty sad that their rookie quarterback went down. I don't know what the rest of the season would look like because of the fact that the kid went down. But it's a pretty scrappy team. They have a lot of talent around the team, so they might stay in a lot of games. But I don't know if they could hang with the Jags. The only reason why I think they'll have a shot is because, like you said, this is a divisional game, so
yeah, no,
anything could happen.
Yeah,
but I picked the Jags.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're a little too much for the Colts. And yeah, you know what? They got a decent backup. You got Minshew starting. We've seen him have big games, but we've also seen him go the other way too. So, but yeah, I trust Jacksonville more than I do the Colts. Saints travel to the Texans. New Orleans coming off of a convincing 34-0 victory at New England. We're going to talk about New England next. And they travel to Houston to play the Texans, who lost that tough game we talked about earlier to the Falcons.
Yeah, I think the Saints is, you know, we know that one thing that's coming with the Saints when they come is the fact that they have a pretty good defense. And what we're seeing now is the emergence of something that looks like an offense. They have incredible talent, I think, out there on the skill position. I think the reemergence of Thomas at wide receiver is a big plus for them. I think the Texans are an incredibly young team, and I think that's going to be their downfall in a lot of games this season. And I think this is probably one of them right here, where they're going to, because of their youth, they're going to make just enough mistakes to lose this game. Saints win.
Yeah, I'm with you. Houston's just not quite there, but C.J. Stroud looks like the real deal.
Yeah.
So at least they got a franchise quarterback to build around. And the next game, you got, just talked about the Patriots coming up there, ugly loss at home, 34-0 to the Saints, and they travel to the Raiders, who coming off ugly-ish win against Green Bay on Monday night. And listen, New England, I know we talk about the toe tag on this team, on Belichick, but I think this is the ending of the Bill Belichick era. Like, we're already hearing some kind of rumors coming around that if they don't straighten out, it's going to be his job. And let's be honest, here's a question. If they do fire, let's say it gets really ugly this year, New England keeps losing and they only win a handful of games. Let's say they win five games, six games. They missed the playoffs, obviously, and they let go of Belichick. Let's say they finally fire him, or he steps down. One or the other, you know, they might give him that respect, right, to make him step down. Do you see a team picking him up, like signing him to be
there? Belichick?
Yeah.
Their head coach?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Mm-hmm. This is a really heavy move. Mm-hmm. Because one thing you have to understand, when a guy like this comes into a room, what it looks like.
Yeah. You're basically
every
house.
Yeah, everybody's scattered. Everybody's scattered.
He's in charge.
And to me, that's where the issue stands. I think at the end of the day, and I think there's a lot of cowards in the NFL in that way, where they will not be able to stand in front of his face and tell him exactly what they feel or think. So because of that, I just think teams are just going to stay away from hiring him. Because I think if he steps around from the New England, I just don't see another team doing it. I really don't.
I thought of two teams. Just quickly today. One, I think there's a good chance, and the other one, I think there's zero chance. But only two teams I thought of. Number one, think of a team that needs a total clean house, right? That also has a franchise quarterback. We talk about them every week. They find ways to lose. They don't know how to win, all that.
The Cowboys?
No.
Oh, I'm like, that would what? Not no.
I'm talking about the Chargers. What do you think?
Oh. I don't know, man. You know, we know in the past we've made mention of the fact that ownership over there, they're kind of there's a reason why they kind of hire specific types of coaches. They, you know what I mean? I don't think ownership likes to mess with guys that are like way too, you know what I'm saying? Like right. that have that kind of power.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know if the ownership will go for that, but that's a good point. That's a good team.
That's the only one I thought of them, and I thought maybe with how bad the Giants are playing, maybe they would just totally, you know, reshuffle the deck and bring in Belichick, and he's from the Giants, obviously. He had all that success there. He's still close with the Giants. That's the only two teams I thought of would have a shot. Everybody else, I don't see him. For the reason you're saying, and he's 71. Can he connect with his team anymore?
Exactly.
And think about it. The last 3 years, what kind of a team has he put on the field?
That's the thing. You could speak to how this guy. I could speak to how incredibly great this guy is as a defensive coordinator, and how great he's been, and how innovative he's been over the years. You can't really argue with that. The problem is, as a GM, he sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
It just is what it is. He just sucks as a GM, man. He has not, and then he does this thing with players where. Like one of the players that always bothered me was the way he dismissed Chandler Jones.
Yep.
You know, it's like, man, I'm gonna get rid of this dude before he became, and this dude basically became a 12 sack a season guy in Arizona forever. You know what I mean? So
and just recently,
I don't know.
Look what he's done with Mac Jones. I'm not saying Mac Jones was gonna be a, you know, an elite quarterback, but you're giving him zero chance. With what coordinator you gave him his first 2 years.
Yeah.
Right? And the receivers around him. I mean, you gave him nothing. So, again, he still might have turned out to be not that good anyway, Mac Jones, but we'll probably never know because, you know, this year he's got nothing around him. And even in bringing in Bill O'Brien has not helped him. So, I don't know. It's not pretty in New England, that's for sure right now. And for Jet fans, we're not that sad about it either.
Oh, we're that sad. Right. How about we're not sad at all?
Right, exactly. We're not shedding a tear about.
No, we're not shedding a tear.
No.
And I will speak for a lot of us. We're over the moon. How about that?
Exactly.
Hey, listen, I know a lot of Jets fans that are. Hey, you know, hey man, get the expletive out of here. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, because we took everything you had, man. The only sad thing is we weren't able to beat you when at your best. That's the only thing that's sad about this. Other than that, yeah, get out of here, man. We good.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So
yeah, I'll pick the Raiders because I don't. I mean, and to tell you the truth, I still haven't given up on the Patriots defense. I still think they're very good. But, bro, Max Crosby is an animal, man.
Yeah.
This dude. Whew.
Yeah.
Man, listen. If you got any time, find his highlights on YouTube or something.
Oh, yeah.
Sheesh.
Yeah, he doesn't get the credit that I think.
No, the people don't talk about this dude enough, man.
I agree.
Yep.
I just think New England's a mess. I'm not saying the Raiders are that good, but I think the Raiders will pull it out somehow. Next game, you got Arizona. They came off their loss against Cincinnati. We talked about that. And they travel to the Rams, who come off a loss at home against the Eagles.
Well, you know what the Eagles are, so yeah. I think the Rams are a good team. I just don't think, you know, not a lot of teams in the NFL are going to beat the Eagles right now. So, yeah, as much as I am impressed with what the Cardinals have been able to do, I just think they just don't have enough to hang with teams like that. I think the Rams are slightly better than them. Slightly better right now. Right, I picked the Rams.
like a borderline playoff team. You know, like they're right there. Stay healthy. I think they can make a run. And then this is an interesting game. I don't think we'd be talking about Detroit at Tampa Bay as being a decent game, but I think this might have a shot because Tampa's been playing great this year. 3-1, Baker. You know, we've made fun of him a little bit over the over his time here, but you know what? He's actually playing pretty good. They're coming off a bye. Detroit's coming off a win. What do you think? And also, here's the other thing to add to this game. Tampa's going to be playing with their orange jerseys, their classic creamsicle jerseys. So,
creamsicle? Oh, no. My eyes are going to hurt. Oh, yeah,
very possible. So,
I do not like that color, man. I really don't. I know that it seems like these teams are close because of the their record, but
shouldn't be enough.
No. Aiden Hutchinson is a star in the making. I don't know if you caught that game or you caught parts of this game. Watch the highlights. He made an incredible one-handed interception. Makes absolutely no sense. This kid is something else, man. I think he leads the NFL in pressures right now by a D-line, an edge player. Incredible talent. The Lions have players like that all over their roster. And you could tell by where they rank on offense as fifth and where they rank in defense as seventh. I think what has separated the Buccaneers a lot is because they still have one of the better defensive minds in the NFL in Todd Bowles, calling defensive plays. And he's squeezed the last juice out of a lot of the talented players on that team. And they're currently ranked second on defense in the NFL. And that's what's given them, in my opinion. And some very timely passes by Baker Mayfield. Now, he's always known to do these things. What he does is he will kind of, you know, make like three throws a game where you'll be like, oh my God. If only he was like 6'2". Nah, I'm just kidding. But yeah, he's that kind of player where he does give you the hope once in a while. But I don't think he is the engine, the reason why they're 3-1. I think their defense is right now. But I think they're just playing a team that's way better than them in the Lions. And I think the Lions win this game.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then Sunday night, we're going to have to deal with this primetime game, but the Giants travel to Buffalo. It's not going to be pretty.
Oh, boy. I guess Buffalo is not happy from what happened the last time. So they're about to take all their frustrations on an offensive line that let two teams sack them a total of back-to-back 11. Was it 11 sacks in one game? And then the game before that, it was 7?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Sheesh. Almost 20 sacks in two games?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Are you asleep or something? I don't know. As an offensive line, man, you need to question yourself.
I would assume that they thought that it was a matchup where Brian Daboll was going back to Buffalo. And I maybe that's what they think, that was going to be the highlight, you know, the best game of the day. I don't know. But
Probably.
I guess. But, ooh. It's ugly.
I know the Giant. Listen, and the craziest thing is like a trend that we should have seen. They were for allowing pressures on the offensive line. They were one of the worst teams. I think they were bottom three in the NFL, or top three in the NFL in allowing pressures as an offensive line. Right now, they're in line to beat their record or the number that they had last year by a ton. So it's crazy what's going on over there, man. I don't even know how they're going to answer a lot of the questions they have.
Yeah, and it's going to get ugly. You got Daniel Jones is out. And
yes.
Like you said, their tackle's out. I think both their tackles are out, right?
Yeah, that's what it's looking like. And Tyrod Taylor is going to be a quarterback. I mean, nothing against Tyrod Taylor.
No, but yeah, that game's going to be an ugly one.
Hey, AJ Epenesa showed me something.
Mm-hmm.
He really played well in place of the other kid, that guy was injured, the other edge player, I forget his name. But yeah, he definitely had a good game for the Bills.
And you know Buffalo is going to want to get back into the winning column after losing last week.
What would work to me against the Bills is if the Giants could run the ball, because Daquan Jones is out again. When they lost him last year, you could tell the difference in that defense. He's out, and I think he's going to be out for four games because he's on IR, and their best linebacker is also out.
Yeah, Milano, right?
Yeah, he's out too, and he's going to be on IR too. So you put those two things together, I would say that the best way to do is to attack that team running the ball. Try any with anything else. I don't know. Yeah. Oliver has been playing pretty good too. So
yeah,
we'll see.
That Monday night, closing it out, should be a good one. Dallas, coming off of their loss at San Fran, 42-10. So you're going to think they're going to want to play a lot better there. But they're staying. I guess they're staying on the West Coast. They go to L.A. to play the Chargers.
Well, if something ails you, that's pretty good medicine.
Yep.
You play the Chargers.
Chargers coming off a bye, though, so that might help.
Yeah, I mean, help me out here, man, because I don't know what to say about the Chargers. I really don't. Like, what do you refer? I mean, I love the QB. I love the kid. I think he's incredibly talented.
It's almost like you don't know what you're going to get with this team.
No.
You might get a really good team, or you might get a team that looks clueless and can't get a win. You know what I mean? Like, because they have talent on that team. There's talent up and down the roster on the Chargers.
Yeah.
Find a way not to win. And, you know, unfortunately, you got to point at the coaching. And if they don't make the playoffs this year, I would think the coach is gone.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. I think the fact that you can't find an identity for a team of that magnitude, which would say the Chargers with that kind of talent they have, I think that's a good enough question to ask. Because as a coach, that's your job, no?
Yeah, absolutely.
To give your team identity. If they don't have one, then yeah, why not? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you would think so. So I'm going to give the Chargers a little bit of an edge just because they're coming off a bye week. So they have that extra week to prepare for Dallas. But Dallas is another team. Dallas could flip the switch, right? We've seen it firsthand against us. So that's a team that could be extremely dangerous.
Yes. Yes. And I know everybody's out here making fun of them because they lost to the 49ers. I think you would lose to the 49ers too, people.
Yeah.
Let's be real. There's not too many teams in the NFL that could beat the 49ers right now.
But you did see Parsons kind of, I think on his podcast or whatever, said it's going to be different next time we play them.
Oh, please. There's nothing I hate more than that.
Right. Like, I get it, but...
Where were you during the game?
Right. I didn't hear your name for some reason.
Thank you. Like, what is this about the next time? You played them in the playoffs last year. This was your next time.
Right. Exactly.
And you laid a damn egg. What are you talking about next time? How many next times do you get?
Right.
You know?
And it's like
you know, when I was growing up, you know, the kid, you know, you fight with this kid and the kid beat your butt and you're like, I'm gonna get you, man. I'm gonna get you.
Yeah.
And you know in your heart that this dude just took you out and you don't know how you're gonna ever beat this dude. Yeah. When you're, you know, trying to save face, you're like, yeah, I'm gonna get you, man, next time, man. Come on, bro. That's the problem. And one of the most questionable things I think this weekend was the fact that they had him aligned on the against the left tackle the whole time. Well, for most of what I saw anyway. I don't know if it was for the whole game. I think I'm going to find the game and look, rewatch it to see. But if it's true that he was aligned against Williams the whole game, I think that was an incredible short-sightedness by the coaches. People forget who the hell that is. I mean, I love Micah Parsons, don't get me wrong. But that is one of the best tackles to ever play tackle. I mean, I understand you think this dude is the next, the coming of, but he ain't arrived yet. This dude we're talking about here, that tackle, he's arrived and he's about to leave. That's how much he's been doing this and how long he's been doing this. And if that's exact, that's what they did. If they actually aligned this kid against this guy for a whole game, I don't know. I think they deserve what they deserve. Because the thing to me, the thing that makes Parsons dangerous is the fact that you can put him a lot of places. And you could use him to do a lot of things. And if you negate those things, to me, you're kind of robbing yourself of what he actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's going to be an interesting game because you got two teams that are almost the same in that
character-wise.
Well, one thinks they are the great team, but they're just not. And the other team doesn't know what they are. So I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I keep picking the Cowboys to win. I don't foresee them playing. I don't foresee them playing, you know, playing the way they played against. I think that the matchup was what it was. I think the Cowboys are going to show up.
Here's the other what if. What if they come out like they did last week against San Fran?
Oh, Lord.
Especially this week, Jerry Jones is defending Prescott, right? He's the quarterback. He's good enough to lead us to a Super Bowl.
His tune will change, I'll tell you that, if they lay an egg at the Chargers. I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah. I would think so.
His tune will change because we've seen this before. We've seen this one before real quick.
Yep.
Lay two eggs in a row. Hey, this old man will start calling you out by name.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But I think they win this game. I say they return to their good ways and they win this game.
All right. Maybe it's just me hoping that they lose, but
I don't blame you.
Yeah. So that is week 6. Hopefully you enjoy the games. Remember to check out playlikeajet.com for Charmin's articles there. Check them out. I mean, you can follow us on Twitter at Liftoff Jets. You know where to find our podcasts. And we will see you guys next week.